Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer at CBS Sports. Also a role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Thursdays with Jeffrey Wright and company. Monday, Wednesday, Friday right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. David W. Cobb on X. David, how's it going?
Hey, man, it's going great. Friday, we got football all around. So, it's it's good.
How about Eagles-Cowboys last night? First 10 minutes, we have season-ending injury, ejection, spit. Sharing spit. We didn't previously believe that, but we've seen the video back, and Dak Prescott spit in Jalen Carter's direction, and then the first four drives ended in touchdowns for both teams. So
that was nuts. And then we had the CeeDee Lamb. I mean, just disastrous drop at the end. I mean, the Cowboys had every opportunity.
Right.
How many times did they have the football down 4 points in the last 10 minutes? And just couldn't get it done. It was just vintage Cowboys.
Yeah, and Miles Sanders, finish that damn run. Finish it.
Yeah.
You're in the open field. You got hawked down by Zach Bond. Come on, man. That's brutal.
Yeah, that is brutal. That is absolutely brutal. I mean, the Cowboys, I didn't give them a chance going into that game. And then they somehow found a way. And then, I mean, gosh, like I don't know if I felt bad for CeeDee Lamb, but that is a catch that he makes 98 times out of 100, and to not make it in that situation, that's brutal.
Yeah, well, Cowboys, I didn't necessarily give them a chance to win, but to cover, I was kind of there, right? I figured we'd see some type of funny business in that game. Obviously, it's a rivalry game. Cowboys are trying to prove something now that they traded Micah Parsons, but I think this offseason has been riddled by so much Jerry Jones drama that we sort of convinced ourselves that the Cowboys are going to be bad. But in reality, when Dak Prescott's on the field, they're pretty good. They just are.
Well, yeah,
it's sort of minimum 9-10 wins.
Defensively, they did a decent job of keeping Philly in check in that game, which is not easy to do when you've got...
They kind of stopped the run, but you know my biggest issue? Didn't really get after the passer very well. Jalen Hurts broke the pocket and converted on third down more than one time. It feels like that could have been helped if you didn't make that trade last week. But
that's fair. I mean, I knew it would all come back to that, right? Like if Philly wins, like everyone's going to find a way to bring it back to the fact that Micah Parsons is not playing for the Cowboys.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny getting to a after a big Cowboys loss where I don't think anybody's blamed or gone after Dak Prescott in the slightest. I thought Dak played wonderfully. He put his guys in great positions. They just didn't make catches. Jake Ferguson and CeeDee Lamb a million times.
He did. Yeah. You mentioned Ferguson. Gosh, there was a good ball there on one of the late fourth quarter drives. It was way less of a slam dunk catch than the drop from CeeDee Lamb. But yeah, I mean, he was making great throws and his receivers just didn't come through for him. And I mean, I hope that's not a recurring issue for the Cowboys because, it feels like they've got talent in that receiver room. I feel like CeeDee Lamb's one of the best 5 or 10 receivers in the NFL, but man, I think he was targeted 13 times and it just felt like he wasn't making the big plays. So, yeah, man, like, I guess in some ways I was actually sort of impressed with Dallas because, I mean, I didn't really give them much of a chance to cover. I just thought the vibes were too bad to go into Philly and really make it a game, and they had every opportunity to win it.
All right, now week 2 of college football. It's going to be highlighted by that game, ABC 6:30, Oklahoma in Michigan, number 15 versus number 18. All right, now I'm gonna give you an observation from week one. This is strictly my eyes, not necessarily stats, nothing like that. But I am fully drinking the Bryce Underwood Kool-Aid. I know they played New Mexico, but he was 21 for 31, 251, one touchdown, no interceptions. He's athletic enough to run the ball when he needs to. He seemed to make really good decisions as a true freshman, which did impress me. But I found myself watching back his snaps a couple of times this week, and I just sort of pointed it out, and I said, that's what it looks like. Like, that's what a next-level quarterback prospect looks like, even as a true freshman. How did you feel about our first look at Bryce Underwood? And am I overstating it, or do you feel like there's something there that's going to be unlocked this year?
No, I'm in full agreement. I was really impressed with Bryce Underwood, to the extent that it makes me think Michigan could, maybe be a playoff team. Certainly could be a 9-win team and somebody that's in that playoff discussion, depending on who they beat and who they lose to and all those sorts of factors. I'll say this, though. It's going to be just a totally different level of challenge this week, going to Oklahoma and playing against Brent Venables and playing in a hostile SEC environment at night. It's just such a massive level up in competition and in an environment and in the stakes and in the pressure on an 18-year-old. Long term, I have no concerns. Long term, week one, I saw enough to believe Bryce Underwood will eventually be the top quarterback selected whenever he comes out. I guess that could potentially be 2028. I'm a believer in what I saw. Short term, I've got concerns about what it looks like in week two, going to play Oklahoma, because Oklahoma's got issues, but I think their issues are mainly on the offensive side of the ball with their ability to run the football. I think the Oklahoma defense is going to be pretty good, and I just know that Brent Venables is licking his chops seeing a freshman quarterback coming into his stadium and thinking that he's going to do the same thing to Bryce Underwood that Ohio State did to Arch Manning, and just put him in jail. That to me is the most fascinating storyline of week two, is what does Bryce Underwood look like on the road against Oklahoma? Because my gosh, if he goes down there, Gabe, and leads Michigan to a win at OU, can you imagine?
He'll be at the top of the Heisman sort of lists going into next week.
Yeah, as a true freshman, absolutely. Yeah, that's what it'll be.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, but I'm such a buyer. Like, the release is so quick. He throws a beautiful ball. He's got athleticism. He's big. And it's so strange to me because, like, Arch Manning has been on campus for, 2 years now, and he looked out of sorts. I know he was at the Shoe, and I know Bryce Underwood was playing a home game, but Bryce Underwood's been on campus for spring and fall, and the decisiveness, the decision-making is what just jumped out to me. He just did not seem to have any problems with deciphering what he was seeing on the other side. Granted, it's New Mexico. Yeah, I can mention that a million times, but he was decisive with the football, and with a true freshman, that's not common.
Yeah, he looked super comfortable in the pocket. He looked like he understood what the assignment was, and he didn't try to play hero ball or play outside of himself. And when you have a defense that is – on Michigan's level, and I realize that Michigan was not perfect in week one. Like, if we want to step back and talk about Michigan as a whole, there were flaws. Like, their run game looked good. Their, Bryce Underwood looked good, but like, their defense wasn't perfect. But in theory, anyway, this should be a team where Bryce Underwood doesn't have to empty the quiver and doesn't have to show everything in his toolkit to get them victories. This should be a situation where he can just sort of be a game manager and then pick and choose the spots where he's got to really go out there and win them games. With that in mind, I thought he really understood the assignment. He didn't try to go out there and be Cam Newton and try to live up to all the comparisons in his first game as a college quarterback. He just went out there and did what it took to make Michigan a winner in week one. But it's going to take something more than that in week two. He's going to have to make some plays with his legs because Oklahoma's going to get more pressure on him than New Mexico did. So it's going to be an evolution. But I love the fact that Michigan started out with a lower-tier G5 opponent. Especially when you have a freshman quarterback or a new quarterback or whatever the situation is, I think it's smart to kind of have that built-in buffer before you get to the big dog, right? And I realize these schedules are built 5-6 years out in advance. But, you know, and I love the big week one games, and they make sense for LSU and for Clemson. But I don't know that if you're Michigan, you wanted to be going to play Oklahoma in week one. I think that it's going to really benefit them that they didn't, as they go down there to play what is clearly the marquee game of week two.
So since Brent Venables has been at Oklahoma, we know there hasn't really been a massive issue on the defensive side of the ball. It's been with the offensive side of the ball. And John Mateer is supposed to alleviate a lot of that. Week one against Illinois State, again, FCS opponent, not very good of FCS opponent, 30 for 37, 392, three touchdowns and an interception. One thing that popped out to me, though, just looking at the box score, was Oklahoma didn't run the ball very well. 32 carries, 103 yards, 3.2 average against Illinois State. Like, how confident or positive should I feel about this offense against, like, premier opponents like they're going to be playing this weekend?
Yeah, not. I mean, I wouldn't feel confident about it at all. Jaden, for one thing, Jaden Knott didn't even really play, and he was their star running back.
Was he even listed as the starter on the depth chart? Because I don't think he was.
No. He was listed at number three on the depth chart.
Wow.
And I think that's injury-related more so than anything.
Okay.
From what I understand, he was slowed down in fall camp. I don't remember if it was a shoulder or a knee or whatever. It was something, right? So that's a concern. Now, Brent Venables did say he's going to be a bigger part of their game plan moving forward. From what I've seen, he hasn't specified if, quote, moving forward means on Saturday night or if that means, you know, getting into October, November. We'll see there. But, I mean, that's a huge part of it, too. But, honestly, it really doesn't matter who's toting the rock. Like, if your offensive line isn't blocking, then it's going to turn into John Mateer having to do it all himself. And I watched enough tape from this game to sort of tell you some of the plays John Mateer was making – I don't know that he's going to be able to make against better defense,
right?
Because it's a lot of, like, it's the concerns you mentioned, but you see it when you see it, then it all makes sense, right? It's like he's evading the defenders. But then you realize these are FCS, mid-tier FCS defenders that he's evading to give himself more time. What's he going to do when he's got a 6'3", 265-pound former four-star prospect getting into his face, right? Like that little shimmy and shake that buys you the extra second to make a throw, you know, all of a sudden, I don't know that that's going to work against the top 10, top 15 caliber defenses out there. So, I mean, I've got my questions. I mean, he had a nice stat line in week one, but the fact is, you know, it's week one against an FCS opponent. Why are we still having to throw the football deep into the fourth quarter? Like, that's a concern. So, yeah, I mean, I think Oklahoma and Michigan both have a lot of question marks going into this game. I mean, you go and look at the national title odds sheet. I mean, neither one of these teams are really in the top 10 of the national title odds. I think Oklahoma is like 60-1, Michigan somewhere around like, you know, 40-1. So, you know, I mean, the betting markets and anyone who watched the week one performances of these teams realizes, like, there's a lot of imperfections with both of them, which makes picking a side here, you know, rather tough.
All right. Now, I have come to a realization, or at least I have a take on a game coming up this weekend, 3:15 SEC Network. South Florida is going to go to number 13 Florida. I know what South Florida did week one against Boise State, number 25 team in the country, 34-7. It was an ass kicking. Just truthfully, Boise State couldn't get anything going offensively. They turned the ball over. South Florida took advantage. They didn't turn the ball over. Byron Brown looked phenomenal. I still feel like this is a comeback to reality week for South Florida. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the markets are kind of with you there. This line has been creeping up and up and up and up, closer to three touchdowns. And so, no, well, I understand what you're saying on South Florida, because – a lot of their dominant win was because Boise State, one, didn't tackle, two, committed horrible penalties, three, turned the football over. Like, Boise State really just rolled over and played dead in that game against South Florida. And Byron Brown was awesome, but it's going to be a totally different level of competition against Florida. So I get that. But what I don't have any read on yet is honestly what Florida is. Because Long Island University was their week one opponent. And you couldn't get anything from that film. The only thing I got, honestly, was that I thought Florida looked a little shaky offensively out of the gate. Like, the passing attack didn't exactly look like a perfect operation yet. So I totally understand the South Florida logic there. I haven't seen enough from Florida to really definitively say that, oh, yeah, they're going to go out there and waltz to a three-touchdown victory over South Florida. If anything, I might take the under on this game because, I just don't know that South Florida is going to get to going to get to 17 or you know, anything in that range against Florida.
I was impressed with the defensive line of South Florida. I was impressed with the defense in general. I was also impressed with their playmakers, Byron Brown, namely. But I don't know if you had the same takeaway after that game, just watching it. I was not as impressed with their offense as I thought I'd be. Didn't put up that many yards. Didn't stay on the field very, very long. And it felt like a lot of their big plays were sort of off script, Byron Brown making something happen with his legs. I didn't feel like there was a whole bunch of on schedule playmaking, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, the one who did pop was Chaz Nimrod, Tennessee transfer at wide receiver. And there's been a couple of them who have popped now. You know, you saw Squirrel White finally making some plays last week. And so, you know, that's kind of what you got to do with that system is you got to have a couple of big-time deep shots. And then you got to be able to run the football and at least get ahead of the sticks a little bit to keep the defense honest. Can you do that? Can you execute that against Florida? That's the biggest problem with the Josh Heupel, Alex Golesh sort of system. It's just really hard to execute it against opponents that have comparable or better athletes than you do. And that's the boat South Florida is in against Florida this week. And Florida sees this because they prep for it every year with Tennessee. So it's not like there's going to be any deception or uncertainty with what South Florida is trying to do. So that's why, I mean, I would hesitate to believe that, you know, South Florida could really go out there and put up big numbers against Florida.
Yeah. Also this week, Ole Miss owes Kentucky one, right? I mean, I'm hoping Ole Miss is up for that game, right? I'm hoping that they go out there and handle business in a big way, because last year, it's hard to get that out of your memory.
Well, I'll be there live and in person for that one. I'm excited to let's see what Austin Simmons is, man. I'm excited to figure that out. Like he flashed. He had some moments in the season opener against Georgia State. He also had a couple of picks.
Two picks in the first quarter, I believe, right?
Well, he did, yeah. And I think one of them was really a bad read, and then the other one I think was, you know, it just happens, right, when you throw the ball 40 times or whatever, right? But, no, I mean, from there he looked good, but it was Georgia State. Now he goes on the road. I mean, this kid could be really good. He's playing quarterback for Lane Kiffin, right? So obviously, you know, the potential is there. Lane Kiffin could have gone out and got him a QB from the portal if he'd really not believed that Austin Simmons could be special. But here you go. You're going on the road in the SEC. I know it's Kentucky, but Kentucky's still decent defensively. So this is a big moment where we're going to learn. Like, we're going to learn if Ole Miss is a playoff contender based on what they do against Kentucky. If they go up there and barely squeak out a win or take a loss, then all right, we're putting them in the 7-5 bucket. But if they go up there and put up 40 on Kentucky and dominate that game like I kind of think they might, you know, then the conversation on Ole Miss coming out of this week is, all right, they're right back in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, I think we're on upset alert this week, and it's kind of a quiet one because Illinois is quietly number 11 in the country, for those that don't know. With Luke Altmyer at quarterback coming off a really good year last year, they beat Western Illinois 52-3 in the opener, and they look good. It's against Western Illinois. That's how week one non-conference games go. Duke played Elon. Darian Mensah, the $3 million man. I think he had 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and 389 yards throwing the ball. But Illinois is traveling to Duke. This feels like we could have a nice little upset here week two. Potentially.
Yeah, I mean, potentially. I'm on Illinois. Okay. I think Duke is due for some regression. And you mentioned Darian Mensah's stat line there, but my concern with it is that Duke was in a close game against Elon in the fourth quarter last week. That, what's that about? That's concerning.
They scored 35 in the second half. Yeah, it's one of those.
Yeah, well, like, I just, you know, it's the same thing as John Mateer putting up big numbers against Illinois State. It's like, that's not ideal for you to have to be slinging it around and throwing for 400 yards against your week one patsy. No, I mean, I think Duke is still going to be solid this year, but I mean, this is as good as Illinois football has been in a long time. They got a lot of continuity. They have a vintage Brett Bielema offensive line too, and I think that's going to be hard for Duke to deal with. So Yeah, I like the Illini there.
Yeah, and final thing, what do you make of Kenny Dillingham and his, I guess, slick shots at the South this week, where he said they're staying an hour and a half away from Starkville because they couldn't find a hotel that wasn't a casino, which we know is not true. Then also they had the cowbells at practice, and I feel like they need more cowbells to really simulate what's gonna be coming for them on Saturday. But what have you made of all that back and forth?
Well, yeah, the video I saw, it was like, I don't know if you saw the same one. It was like the student trainer. It was one girl walking around with a cowbell. I'm like, man.
With two small cowbells, too. Like free giveaway cowbells. Not the big full-size cowbells.
Have you ever been to a game at Davis Wade?
I have not.
You should sometime, and preferably for one that has some level of excitement around it. Because like it is surprising how loud it is. And it is like, it will rattle your eardrums. Those cowbells are no joke. They make what is, you know, what a 50 something some odd thousand seat stadium sound like a 100,000 seat stadium. Like when it's a big game and the cowbells are going, it is really loud. I think Kenny Dillingham, I don't know. Like I thought it was odd, like that he decided to sort of like, be all holier than thou and high and mighty going into a road game against an SEC opponent. Like, I just don't know that that's the route I'd want to take. I don't know that I'd want to give Mississippi State some motivation for a big game. I'm on Mississippi State here straight up. Like, I think
this is a
point where they
can go improve. Is that right?
Look, I have the same concerns about Arizona State right now that I have about Boise State coming out of week one. It's you had your star back, Ashton Gentry at Boise, and Cam Scadaboo at Arizona State. You lose that guy, and then you have to find your identity again. Boise State tried to find it in week one. They couldn't. Now Arizona State's going to go to Starkville to try to find it. Because, look, they played an FCS team in week one, and they didn't look great.
No.
And now it's Sam Levitt's got to play the role of do-it-all everything because they don't have the stud who led them to greatness last year. It's the exact same blueprint as Boise State. And I think they're in for some regression. I think Mississippi State might go out there and get a big dub.
The only reason I think it's different than Boise State is because Boise State, outside of Ashton Gentry last year, didn't have another piece really doing the heavy lifting. I think we learned that from week one. But there's one name on that Arizona State roster that makes me feel at least marginally better than what you're saying about
Jordan
Boise State. Jordan Tyson.
Yeah.
I mean, he's to me, best wide receiver in college football.
Yeah, he's a projected first-round NFL draft pick, too. So, I mean, he could very easily go out there and make 12 catches for 145 yards and two touchdowns, you know? I mean, but it's no secret who they're going to try to get the ball to. I think that's obvious. So,
they targeted him 17 times against Northern Arizona.
Yeah,
17
I mean,
times.
So I don't know what that looks like or how you game plan for a guy like that. You just double-team him or what. But, no, I mean, I think Mississippi State's going to be way, way, way more competitive this year for no other reason than they literally went out and got bodies. They needed heavy people on both lines of scrimmage. And I don't know that this is a bowl team, but it's going to be a more competitive team. And for crying out loud, I mean, they were awful last year and they almost beat Arizona State then. Now they get them at home when they do actually have the horses they need to compete at the Power Four level. So yeah, I just think Mississippi State might surprise some
people. And how about this? While we're talking about this on the TV screen inside the studio, Stanford Steve is giving out his ESPN pick of the week, ESPN bet pick of the week, and he's on Mississippi State plus 6.5. How about?
Well, I'm not going to cross Stanford Steve. So yeah,
there you go. All right, well, David, I'll let you roll. Enjoy the ball this weekend.
Yeah, you as well.
He is David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer at CBS Sports. Also a role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Thursdays with Jeffrey Wright and company. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. Now, coming up next on the Gabe Kuhn Show, let's get you some picks. Let's make you some money. Lee Sterling joins on the other side.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to make some money with Lee Sterling at Paramount Sports on X. He's the number one documented capper for football, Major League Baseball, basketball, UFC, and NHL. He also is a Locked On Bets co-host and analyst. Lee, how's it hanging? How's it going?
It was great until last night, and feeling real good at half.
Sure.
And 41, I had the over 41. I had 41 points out of 47.5, 48, and then nothing. Fumble, delay of almost an hour, and stayed up to over midnight, and just absolute. I mean, I don't know if I've ever lost a total that bad.
Yeah, 24-20 for the entire second half. That's not
right.
Fun. That would
one field goal.
And it would anger me too because of how close. The Cowboys came on multiple occasions. Miles Sanders, get your giddy up, man. Oh, unhitch the trailer. Oh, oh. Get going. My gosh.
The only good thing is it's one game.
Yeah, so. And then also Dak was he was on the money last night, and his pass catchers couldn't catch a damn ball.
The only thing worse was I had CeeDee Lamb in my fantasy league, and he was horrendous in the last possession. Three drops, and then Chris Collinsworth making excuses for him?
Yeah,
come on.
No. He's supposed to be one of the – and also, the CeeDee Lamb drop thing, that dates back a long time, Lee. Like 35 drops since 2020. That's the most in the league among qualifying wide receivers.
Yeah.
Like, it's not new.
The
excuse-making wasn't
a bit much. You want to be a top receiver?
Much.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you want to be a top five receiver, you drop maybe one of those balls, not four or five.
Also, I need to ask you this. Jalen Carter, should we be looking at a suspension or what? Or do you think the game last night was enough?
I think he's going to get a game.
Okay.
I'd be shocked if he doesn't get anything. That just makes no sense at all, what he did.
Yeah, well.
You got to reel that in.
Yeah, no doubt. Dak, though, last night didn't take his place in the incident seriously.
No.
He looked directly at him and spit at his feet. Doesn't mean you go spit in the guy's face, but still, like
you
did this. You were the one who instigated it. All right, now week two, let's go ahead and hop into this slate. We'll start with the biggest game. Oklahoma at home versus Michigan, number 15 versus number 18. Oklahoma -5. Now, I just want to get your opinion on this. You're a quarterback guy, you played quarterback. I watched Bryce Underwood, and I know it's against New Mexico, and his stats weren't gaudy, right? 251 yards passing, one touchdown, no interceptions. And he's a true freshman. I understand the circumstances, but when I watch him play and I look at the tools and his release and how he's scanning the field, like, my first reaction is that's what an NFL draft, NFL caliber quarterback looks like.
I agree. I think he's as good as advertised. Here's what's interesting about this game. I do believe, well, he didn't run once. I think they're holding back. If you play college player props, I do believe they're going to run him quite a few times here. So they were holding back, and I think he's going to be a problem. Also, Justice Haynes, you see why Alabama had trouble running the football. He had 159 yards in that game and three touchdowns. As good as John Mateer is, and I love him, I mean, he's going to make OU a good team. They still can't run the football. Only 103 rushing yards game last week against Illinois State here. I think Michigan's offensive and defensive lines are the difference here. They won it at Ohio State. They can win at Oklahoma. Wrong team favored. Michigan outright 24-21.
Love it. Now, let's get to the Ole Miss game. Ole Miss won 63-7 last week against a team we'll be talking about is playing Memphis later in this conversation, Georgia State. But the first half was kind of ugly, if you go back and watch it. 7-0 after the first quarter. I think it was 17-7, pretty close game with about 4 minutes left in the first half. But then they took off in the second half, and Austin Simmons started to really show what he could do with the football. They're 10-point favorites, and they 0-1 to Kentucky. And they're on the road this time. They lost at home last year. What do you think about Ole Miss this week?
I can tell you everyone is on Ole Miss, everyone. So a friend of mine has a pick'em sheet, and ready for this? 134 out of 140 people against the spread were on Ole Miss, and that scares me. So they lost last year. They were going to boat race them, look like it. They run out and score the first time, and then all of a sudden the game stopped. Kentucky slowed down the game. They ran the ball, played really good defense. Each of the last four games have been decided by 3-3, 1 in overtime, and 3 points. I think Austin Simmons is going to be great. But do you want to back a kid in his first road start laying double digits? And I'm telling you this right now, he's not great at reading defenses. His two interceptions, he did not read the coverage at all. Georgia State is some kind of bad. I mean, they're so bad, they dipped into the transfer portal to take T.J. Finley. I mean,
and they're going to
on a Monday.
We'll talk about it. They might play him this week too.
Yeah, that's crazy. But they did run for 5.5 yards per carry on Ole Miss. And this is where Mark Stoops does his best work. If they get boat raced like Ole Miss did against Arkansas last year, he's in trouble. But they're 7-3 the last 6 years as a home dog. I'm going to go against the norm. I'm not giving this to my clients. I'm probably going to play this game live and see what happens. I think after a couple series, I'll figure out this game. But I think Ole Miss is going to escape 28-24. Kentucky covers the double digits.
All right, now this next game, I think most of my listeners will be like, "Well, you know, why are we picking this one? You know, what's big about this one?" But it's Houston minus 14 against Rice, and the big reason this is on the card this week, I would imagine, is because Rice showed some promise last week. They went on the road against Louisiana, one of the better teams in the group of six this year, and certainly has been for the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, went on the road and won 14-12. Now, offensively, they couldn't throw the ball out of their own shadow. They had to run it. Their running back, Quentin Jackson, had 22 carries for 122 yards and a touchdown. Low-scoring game, rock fight, no doubt. But Rice showed some real promise. They really did in week one.
They did. They did, and I think it was a good choice to finally part ways with Mike, my way or the highway, Blomgren. He just wasn't getting the job done here. They're going to present problems because you have to prepare for a totally different offense. They're one of the few teams other than Army, Navy, Air Force, and I think Georgia Southern to some extent who run – well, Georgia Southern passes now. They used to be a running team, but – they run the ball predominantly out of a triple option. They ran the ball 53 times, only threw it 9 times. That's going to shorten games. They did, I mean, UL Lafayette's down a little bit this year, but they always are pretty tough. And the LA double-digit points with the Houston offense, it was 128th last season and didn't really impress down in class versus Stephen F. Austin, only 4.2 yards per carry. I think Houston's going to win 24-14. There's going to be like 6-7 possessions. 6-7 possessions, you got to win by 3 possessions, 2 touchdowns and a field goal more than the other opponent. That's tough. I like Houston to win 24-14, Rice to cover.
All right, now Memphis with their first true road test of the year, and I don't even know if I should call it a test. 13.5 point favorites over Georgia State, who lost 63-7. To Ole Miss last week, although I mentioned it already, first half they looked okay. T.J. Finley may get a go, but they left a lot to be desired last week against Ole Miss. The quarterback position, there's no doubt about it. I looked at this line, and I was wondering why it wasn't bigger.
Right.
But I think part of that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan against the spread, namely on the road, in his career has not been that great.
No, but, you know, this is a different season, and I think that – this is a big game. They want to set the tone here. I like Brandon Lewis. I think he's a pretty good fit. They're different. But George State, like I said, mentions some kind of bad. Only positives is they ran for 191 yards. I think one of their yard runs was like 70-something yards. And they won the turnover battle. Other than that, this is a bad team here. If you're thinking about starting a quarterback that's been there 4 or 5 days, just shows you how in trouble you are. The kid should have stayed at Texas State. What was he doing leaving after a record year going to Western Kentucky? I mean, he led Texas State the first bowl and a bowl win in so many years. He's on top of the world. Who knows whether it's his parents or something happened. I'm not sure, but I think Memphis is going to win this game here. Something like 43-16.
Yeah, TJ Finley, this is his sixth school, right? In 6 years?
Yeah. Sixth school in 6 years, yep.
I wish that wasn't as common as it is, Lee. Oh, it's not good for the kid. It's just not good for the kid. It just isn't. Like, the freedom of movement is, it looks fine on the surface until something like that happens. It's just too much.
Right.
All right, now to the NFL. First NFL pick of the year. Broncos are -8 against the Titans in week 1. It'll be in Denver. I talked about the Broncos yesterday on the show. They re-signed Nick Bonito to, I think, $120 million deal. He had 13.5 sacks last year. They re-signed Zach Allen earlier this offseason. I look at that defense. They have the former Defensive Player of the Year in Pat Surtain. Their offense showed some really good promise last year. So I feel like they are one of those dark horse teams that could really make a run at it. But how do you see this game in particular, Cam Ward getting his first start?
So I sat at the Miami-Notre Dame game, my high school coach and his son. And who was the fourth person? Nick Bonito's father. So that was interesting, a lot of fun. So kid is something else. And the average person doesn't even know who he is. Well, he only had 13.5 sacks last year. Third best in the NFL. And if you don't know who he is and you're trying to bet on football games, you're going to be in trouble. Everyone knows about Sean Payton and Bo Nix, but the defense is the strength of this team. The reason Tennessee picked last is they have holes all over the field here. Cam Ward, he can run around in college if he can't find his receiver right away, and he can, you know, scramble for 7, 8, 9 seconds in college and maybe in preseason against second, third teamers. Not going to happen here. Denver, 30-13.
All right, now your game of the week this week is Florida and USF. Florida, 17.5 to 18.5 point favorite, depending on where you look. Let my listeners know where to find that more, Yuli.
Yep, got a big play on this Florida-USF game. You want to get it for free? Just call 800-400-9741. Again, the number 800-400-9741 to get the game on me, and we're ready to go. So give us a call, ParamountSports.com.
You the man, Lee. Appreciate it.
He is
Lee Sterling, Locked On Bets betting analyst and co-host for the Locked On Bets podcast. Go check that out. Check out all of his work at ParamountSports.com. And if you need to follow him on the X, make sure you follow him at Paramount Sports. Now, college football is here, and just as always in the South, we are excited. We have anticipation. We want to know how our teams are going to perform. And if you want to watch how your team's going to perform, go to Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. You'll walk in, the energy hits. Wall-to-wall screens, 15 in particular, 15 HD TVs to be exact. And they can tune it to whatever game that you want. And you're going to make some friends because you're going to have some bets locked in with them. You're going to be rooting in the same way. Whether you're all in on your favorite team or just love the thrill of big matchups in college football, Caesar Sportsbook at Horseshoe Tunica is the spot to feel every play, every score, every win. You can place an order from their game day food menu from Guy Fieri's and get in on the action. It's game day done right. They have a full-service sports betting experience, in-game wagering, staff betting windows, and 10 self-betting kiosks, so you're always going to be able to lock in the bet of your choice. It's the ultimate in college football viewing experiences. If you want to get into the games, get in on the action. You need to get into Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. We'll see you on Saturday. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, now small talk is on the way. And in honor of the NFL season, Connor has dug into some stats revolving around Ravens running back Derrick Henry. And they're absolutely insane. We'll tell you about them when we return. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. So Connor came across a clip from Pardon My Take by Barstool Sports where Big Cat and PFT Commenter were talking about Derrick Henry and his illustrious record-setting high school career. I can say it's illustrious. I can say it's record-setting, but I don't know if that does it justice, Connor. Go ahead and read off some of these stats for me so we can let our listeners know that this may be the best high school football player that ever played.
So the main idea of the clip was they were pointing out Derrick Henry has now been in the NFL for 9 seasons. He's had 2,000-yard seasons, I think. I mean, maybe more, but I know that he's at least had two. And been arguably the best running back in
the NFL.
Future
Hall of Famer.
Future Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. He's still 500 yards away from his high school total from 4 years. In high school, he ran for 12,124 yards and 153 touchdowns over 48 games. In his senior season alone, he had 4,261 yards and 55 touchdowns. He averaged 327.8 yards per game and 9.2 yards per carry his senior season. He had one game where he had 510 rushing yards, and then he had another game where he had 486 yards and 6 touchdowns, and that was in a playoff game.
That was in the playoffs.
He holds the national record for rushing yards in a career, rushing touchdowns in his and rushing touchdowns in a career.
How many rushing touchdowns do you have that in front of you?
He has 153 over 4 years. I also found that when he was in middle school, the Derrick Henry rule was an unofficial rule that was enacted in middle school to curb his overwhelming dominance. When his team was up by 21 points, Henry was pulled from the game and was not allowed to play. I think it also may have been a legitimate safety issue.
I honestly get kind of sad because Derrick Henry, while he was probably enormous and like a freak of nature in middle school, and that's why this rule was created, he was a middle schooler and probably just wanted to play the game that he loved. And he had to get pulled out if they got up by 21-0 and he couldn't be on the field. That stinks. But I agree with you. That's a player safety problem. That's a player safety issue. In middle school, if I'm just estimating in eighth grade, 6'2", 220 pounds, running a 4'6 at the time.
So
that's not something that other middle schoolers can deal with.
There are reports that there were players on his high school football team that quit, that were on defense, because they were like, I don't want to do this.
His own team?
Yeah, they quit because they were like, I don't want to have to practice against him.
Soft.
I don't know. Maybe preservation.
Yeah.
Imagine me trying to tackle
Derek. Imagine imagine normal starter at linebacker for whatever high school team.
Yuli.
That's not going to go to college and play ball. Trying to deal with
he's there for the jersey and the jacket.
Trying to fit the run with Derrick Henry.
Yeah, now he's in a hospital. An Oklahoma drill with Derrick Henry? No, I'm good.
I mean, even now he's a walking player safety issue for NFL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL players.
Correct.
So I can only imagine middle school and high school, but 12,100 some odd yards.
24 yards, 153 touchdowns over 4 years and 48 games. That's insane.
Somebody's going to have to make a better case than that for best high school football player ever, because I'm stamping it right now. That's
insane.
Ridiculous. And I don't think that record will ever be broken. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. We'll come back for hour number three and we'll open it talking some Memphis Athletics. Memphis football plays Georgia State coming up this weekend. We'll do it with Jonah Dillon from the Commercial Appeal.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.